Good morning, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this week's broadcast from River of Life Fellowship Church in Copenhagen, New York. My name is George Gray. I am the senior pastor. This week, we are continuing our journey through the Gospel of Mark as we begin chapter 5, looking at a popular portion of scripture known as the healing of the demoniac. But today, we're going to look at it from a slightly different perspective. So let's just jump right in. Thank you for joining us today. We are in the Gospel of Mark. We're in part 12. We've made it all the way to chapter 5. We're just cruising along. And we're going to cover the first part of chapter 5 today, verses 1 through 20. And we're going to be talking about Jesus being somewhere he's not supposed to be, talking to people he's not supposed to be talking to, doing something that no one would expect, which is a normal day in the life of Jesus and his disciples. But it's an interesting story, and I'm going to try to take it in a slightly different direction. This is normally a story known as the miracle of the pigs and the healing of the demoniac. And I want to look at it in a slightly different way, go figure, right? Because I think one of the things that gets missed is a little bit of the background of this particular account. And I think there's a bigger miracle happening than just healing the demoniac and sending a bunch of pigs running into the water. But we'll get to that in just a little bit. I think what happens today is we get a gift of understanding that I hope we can all see by the time we're done. Okay, so first thing I want to do is we gotta like Jason Lyle said, we gotta have a little broccoli before we get into dessert. And so we're gonna talk a little bit about where this is gonna be happening. So this is happening in an area known as Gerizim. And so remember last week they had left Capernaum, they got in a boat and they were crossing to the other side. They almost die in a storm on the way. The disciples are not very happy. Jesus wakes up, calms the storm, and they land. So they go from Capernaum down to an area known as Kersey. And that's the traditional landing site where this happened, and I'll explain why people believe that this is where this happened before. But if you notice that little picture at the bottom where it says Kersey today, that's the hill that legend says the pigs ran down into the water. About 2,000 pigs. That's a lot of pigs. Okay? That's a lot of pigs. It's floating bacon just down the lake. It's just kind of the way that worked. And we'll look at a couple of things in regards to that a little bit later. But this Gerizim area, it's not a town. Sometimes when we read names of cities and places in the Bible, we think it's a town. This is actually a region. It's a collection of several towns. There was a Roman leader who basically put this together. So this area was being protected. Rome loves to name things. So this the name of this region was Gerizim. The better name for it is the Decapolis. That area. The Decapolis encompasses a larger area than just the Gerizim area, but it's more accurate to where we're looking at today. And the Decapolis is mostly made up of Gentiles, but it's also made up of a large group of what was called Hellenists. And the Hellenists were a couple of different groups of people. You might hear someone talk about Hellenized Jews. That doesn't mean Jews who are going to hell. That's not what that means. A Hellenist was someone who simply was not necessarily Greek or Roman, but was heavily influenced culturally by Greco-Roman culture. And so a Hellenized Jew would have been someone during the captivities when the Babylonians and different groups would carry Jews off to different areas in raids. Some of the Jews would stay in that area. Other Jews would come back to Israel. The Jews that stayed were called the diaspora or the dispersion. So they stayed out there. They maintained their Jewish identity, but they were heavily influenced by Greco-Roman culture to the point where they would do horribly terrible things like wear clothes that had two different fabrics in them. You know, so this is kind of what happens. Now, the Israeli Jews, the more traditional Jews, really looked down on Hellenized Jews. They were compromisers. They were people who weren't living according to the, they weren't really living the life they were supposed to live. So they were not as bad as Gentiles, but they were sort of untalked about subculture in the Jewish community. They were part of us, but you know, the black sheep of the family sort of thing. And so when they left to go to the other side, the disciples knew where they were going. And they would not have necessarily enjoyed being there because the disciples also looked down on Hellenized Jews. Remember, a lot of the discussions and arguments that the disciples would have is like, why are we talking to these people? Why are we going through all of this effort to reach them? Isn't that interesting? Aren't we glad that never happens in the church today? But it does make you wonder why Jesus would go there. They row 10 to 12 miles across the lake. And as we're going to see, Jesus gets off the boat, does a miracle, talks to people. They get back in the boat and row back to the other side. Have you ever tried to row a boat with 13 full-grown men in it 12 miles across the lake? No. I don't want to do, like Keith and Denise, like they'll leave church sometime and be like, we're going to go bike 50 miles. I'm like, nope. I would on a motorcycle. I would even ride slow right next to him. Tired yet? You want to push? No. If you ever see me running, run. Because something has scared me enough. Like, I don't know. But it's really got to be worth it. So, no, I'm not willing to do this. But this was the disciples' whole day. They leave, they go through a storm, they go to a horrible area that they don't want to be seen in or known that they were there. Jesus does something absolutely amazing, then they go back home. That's a crazy day. So let's take a look at what is happening in this. Why would Jesus go through all of this trouble to do this? And that's what we're going to be focusing on a little bit today. So starting in verse 1, it says, then they came to the other side of the sea into the region of the Gerasenes. And when he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs, we'll find this out later, but the guy was butt naked, just so that you know. So you got to get this picture in your head, okay? A man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him, who had his dwelling among the tombs. And no one was able to bind him anymore, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken into pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. And constantly, night and day, among the tombs and in the mountains, he was crying out, gashing himself with stones, and seeing Jesus, and this is an important detail, from a distance, he ran up and bowed before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, what do I have to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God, for the sake of your Father, do not torment me. For he had been saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. And he was asking him, what is your name? And he said to him, my name is Legion, for we are many. And he began pleading with him earnestly not to send them out of the region. Okay, from clean to unclean, let's take a look at this. First, Jesus' disciples go from a comfortable Jewish region where they understood everything to an intensely pagan and unclean region. Now remember, ceremonial cleanliness was very important to the Jews. And they are in a place where almost immediately they are not clean. It means they can't enter the temple. As soon as Jesus steps out of the boat, here comes this naked, demon-possessed man. It's easy to get caught up in the miracle of Jesus casting out demons, but let's not overlook a couple of details. First detail is this man lives among the tombs, meaning he is in regular contact with dead bodies. I'm sure that's how everyone felt. That you didn't get any more unclean than this, okay? A lot of their tombs were above ground. So when we talk about being in contact with dead bodies, this is like beyond gross. So this guy is out of his mind, living in a graveyard, surrounded by what he's surrounded by, and he probably hasn't bathed in years. And this is the guy who starts running up to Jesus. Now imagine that you're the disciples. Here's your rabbi. You believe he's the Messiah. And as soon as you land in this place, you're already thinking, this is sketchy. I don't know why we're here. This isn't where we're supposed to be. Out of the graveyard comes a dirty, smelly, hairy, naked guy possessed by demons. I'm imagining the disciples are like, And this guy lands down in front of Jesus. And what does he start doing? Begging for mercy. Nothing about this makes sense. Okay, nothing about this makes sense. The second thing we want to not overlook is that the demons in this man knew who Jesus was from a distance. Now keep in mind, Jesus hadn't been here yet. It's not like he recognized him from another miracle. The demons recognized God in Jesus from a distance. I don't know what they were seeing in the spirit, but there was something about him that they knew was not only of God, but was God. They identified Jesus from a distance as Son of the Most High God. And their immediate reaction was, have mercy on us. There will come a day with all of us that we will be able to see in the spirit what the flesh cannot see. We'll be dead, but still. I can't wait for that. Don't hear what I'm not saying, okay? Someone call social services. I want to be able to see that. I would love to know what they saw that flesh could not see. Because there was something there. I've read a bunch of commentaries where people speculate. Some guys are like, and we know exactly what the demons are. No, you don't. We're guessing. We have a few ideas. There are some things maybe sort of kind of. But at the end of the day, all we know is that the demonic in this man recognized the Son of the Most High God from a distance, immediately got afraid and ran to him and begged for mercy. How do you think the disciples reacted to that? Remember, they already don't want to be there. This is a pagan area. They already don't want to be there. And here's this smelly, hairy, naked dude possessed by demons running to their rabbi, landing on the ground saying, please have mercy on me. They have never, ever seen anything like this. Jesus had just shown them his power over nature. Remember, he told us, he got up, rubbed his eyes, looked at the storm. Shut up! Storm goes away. And they're already in the boat going, who is this that we're following? And now they land on the shore. And remember, as soon as they got on the shore, this happens. They have to be losing their mind. Or just going, this is the coolest day ever. Whenever the Pharisees would try to deal with the demonic, because this was not an uncommon thing, people being possessed and this, going through these kinds of things, this kind of torment, was not necessarily uncommon in those days. But when the Pharisees and the religious leaders would do it, there was a ceremony. There was a process that they would go through. They would follow the law, they would do what they were supposed to do, and it almost never worked. Very, very rarely would someone actually find healing from this. And I'm wondering if it's because the Pharisees didn't actually trust God, they were trying to trust the process. To me, that makes sense. I don't know. Like I said, who knows? So they would see this. So they were familiar with this, and they had been walking with Jesus, and Jesus would every now and then cast a demon out of someone and he healed someone. It was no big deal. But this was a Gentile, a possessed Gentile who's not looking good. And so Jesus is with this guy. They're immediately unclean. They're surrounded by this kind of setup, seeing something they have never seen before. Demons afraid. That had to be amazing. There had to be something there. And the other thing that we have to remember is that there were other people with them. Remember, when they left, other boats followed them. So this wasn't a private miracle on a beach where it was just the disciples. There were other people whom Jesus had been teaching that had crossed the lake with them who were there. They were witnessing this. This was a very public miracle. And here's where it starts to get interesting. Now it gets interesting? Yes, now it gets interesting. Jesus is asking him, what is your name? What is your name? So in those days, we think of a name, name's a name. Hi, I'm George. Nice to meet you. That's not how names were perceived in this day. Your name actually assigned value to you. If you were a man in the first century, when you would give your name, and then you would add the word bar and then the name of your father. And it meant son of this person. So if I were in the first century, I would be George Bar George. This sounds odd. But it would be George, son of George. What that did is that told everybody the value of you and your lineage. And this is why soiling the family name was not looked kindly upon in those days. You do something stupid and ruin the family name, you make life hard for everybody. And so it was value. So when someone would give their name, there was great meaning behind this. And so when the demons answer and they say, we are legion. Legion is a military term, and everybody there would have known the military term. Everybody there would have understood it because it was a Roman military term. And what it meant was, we are thousands. We are thousands. Not one demon. Thousands. Now imagine this. You're watching your rabbi who would cast out a demon here and there, heal someone here and there. Now here is someone possessed by thousands of demons, and they are begging for mercy from him. Casting the demons out of the guy is impressive, but that is incredible. No one in history had ever witnessed anything like that. Now remember, they're in a region where demons are worshiped. He's in the Decapolis. He's in pagan areas. They have temples dedicated to these demons. They worship their power and their authority. They try to get these demons on their side by offering sacrifices. Demons were part of their normal worship. Now here it is, an element of what they believe is the most powerful spiritual force begging for mercy from this guy. That's mind-blowing. I'm imagining the disciples are going, I have no idea what's happening. Do you know what's happening? No, I didn't expect this. I figured we were going to come over for lunch and then go home. No one's understanding what's going on right here. Jesus is showing an element of authority and power over the demonic that has never been seen before on earth. After showing a level of power over nature that has never been seen. This is pretty amazing. Now, as a Jew, in this moment, if you are listening to this guy and you hear, we are thousands, the first thing that you would be asking is, what did he do? Now, Jews believed that if you were suffering physical malady, if you were possessed, anything like this was happening, either you or your parents did something that made it so that you deserved this. There was a very common view among all kinds of different religious circles. Judaism was one of them. Remember when the disciples say, Lord, who sinned, him or his father, that brought him into this situation? And Jesus said, no, This was so God would be glorified. But they didn't know that at this time. They're looking at this guy, and they would initially be thinking, how great a sin, how great an offense towards God, how filthy a human he would have had to be to not only be possessed by one demon, but thousands. What did this guy do? This must be the worst person ever to live. And they were wrong. Every bit of it was wrong. But at the same time, as Jews, as the disciples, not only is this guy possessed, and they probably think he deserves it, but he was a Gentile, so who cares? Not only is he possessed, so obviously he did something horrible, but he's a Gentile. No one cares. They're not worth the salvation that God offers because they're Gentiles. This was a common view. Have you ever met someone in your life, in or out of the church, doesn't matter, who has had something horrible happen to them, and your thoughts were, they're probably getting what they deserved? Maybe they're not a very kind person. And you're thinking, karma. Stop and consider this. Matthew 7, 1 through 3, do not judge so that you will not be judged. For with that judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure that you measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but not notice the log in your own? Now Jesus is preaching this. Now he's living it. Isn't it interesting that one of the things that we know about the gospel is it is not only the pathway to salvation, but how we handle the gospel is a mirror. The way we project the gospel to somebody else is the way it will be projected back to us when we stand before the Lord. If we view them as unworthy, we're viewing ourselves as unworthy. If they're not good enough for the grace of God, I'm not good enough for the grace of God. I'm going to hold them to a standard that I would never hold myself to, but now I will be judged according to that standard. This is why Scripture tells us, be quick to forgive. Don't hold on to anger. Let it go. Because the measure we use against others will be the measure that God uses for us. So in my opinion, everyone can be saved. There's no sin that's too great. And I'll give grace. I will hand grace out by the buckets. Because I don't want to stand before God and be held accountable to a standard that I will not hold myself accountable to. I want all the grace I can get. So therefore, I've got to give all the grace that I can give. Not as easy as we think it is. Look where they are right now. They're in a Gentile region being confronted by a demon-possessed naked guy who's filthy, hairy, and probably smells unbelievable. Everything about society that they would hold norm to a normal sense of standard has been violated by this one guy alone. And here's Jesus. This is why we're here. This guy. Okay, let's go. It's not like Jesus hasn't done this before. Time to learn something new. But the demons begin to beg Jesus not to send them out of the region. Isn't that interesting? They already know we're not staying in the guy. They already know they're going to be cast out of the guy. He's going to be set free. And what do they say to him? Don't cast us out of the region. Now, we don't know why it's worded that way. But an interesting thing to remember is where they are. They're in the Decapolis. They're in this region where demons are welcome and worshiped and valued. The demonic is lifted up. That makes me think maybe that's why they don't want to leave the region. They're appreciated there. People like us here. We're allowed to do whatever they want. They make sacrifices to us. So don't cast us out of the region. Instead, let's move in a different direction. Verse 11, it says, now there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby on the mountain. And the demons pleaded with him, saying, send us into the swine so that we may enter them. And now this is interesting. People say, well, Jesus cast them out into the swine. No, he didn't. Read the next sentence. Jesus gave them permission. And coming out, the unclean spirits entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, 2,000 of them, and they were drowned in the sea. And their herdsmen ran away, reporting it to the city and the countryside, and the people came to see what had happened. And they came to Jesus and observed the demon-possessed man sitting down, clothed. That's how we know he was naked. They're like, hey, guy's got clothes on. And in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they became frightened. And those who had seen it recounted to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the swine, and they began to plead with him to leave their region. And as he was getting in the boat, Jesus said, fine, you want me to leave? I'll leave. As he was getting in the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed was pleading with him that he might accompany him. But he did not let him, but he said to him, go to your home people, to your own people, and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. And he went away and began to preach in the Decapolis the great things Jesus had done for him, and everyone was marveling. Permission. Jesus did not order them into the pigs. Going to the pigs was their idea. He gave them permission. Knowing full well what was going to happen. The pigs were going to go insane. They were going to run down the hill and drown. This is very confusing. Some people say, well, demons have got to go into something, so they got to go into the pigs. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's actually true. I think demons can go from here to there. I read that somewhere. The Bible. I think there was another purpose behind this, to create chaos. Some people speculate that it may have been because the pigs were being used as offering in pagan temples, but we have no evidence for that. Some people say that the farmers might have been Jewish, but we have no evidence of that. But what we do know is that in that region, it scared the snot at everybody. No one understood what was going on. Remember, they're in Kersey. In Kersey, this is the reason why people believe this happened here. There is a monastery. This is a Byzantine monastery. These are the ruins of it. It's called Kersey National Park. This monastery is dedicated to two things. One was the miracle of the swine. I think that's very funny because that's the first one. Everyone's like really impressed with the pig thing. Oh yeah, and the healing of the demoniac. The whole purpose of this church being there was this is where Jesus did that thing, and it was nuts. It was crazy. Look what happened here. Now, we know that the miracle was so incredible that the local herdsmen began to beg Jesus to leave. That piece is amazing. The man that was cleansed, he was set free from thousands of demons. Now, think about this. The herdsmen are there. They worship these demons. Demonic worship is a part of their life. This is where the power is. Now, all of a sudden, this Jewish rabbi shows up off of a boat, this demoniac that nobody can control, who's been living in the tombs, in the graveyard, been smashing himself with rocks. He's covered in blood and sores and dirt and who knows what else. Comes running down. The demons that they worship are begging for mercy from this guy. This is what the herdsmen are watching. And not only does Jesus send them out, ruin their career, but the man who held the legion that they thought was so powerful is now in his right mind, completely freed, because Jesus said, get out. The power that this demonstrated to these pagan herdsmen had never been seen before anywhere. No one would have even believed that this was possible, but here it is. Can you imagine the fear of Jesus that would have been put into these guys' minds? We thought our demons were powerful. I don't know who this guy is. This was next level. And the first thing they say is, you need to leave. We don't want you here. We don't know what's going on. You need to go. And Jesus says, okay. And the healed man says, I need to come with you. And Jesus, and I think this was the point of the whole journey. Crossing the lake, doing the miracle, and going back and leaving this guy. I think leaving this guy was the purpose of the journey. And this is why. He says, I need to follow you. And Jesus says, no. What you need to do is to go to your people and tell them everything I have done. Now remember, a lot of the times when Jesus would heal, he would tell the people, don't say anything. He would send them off, don't say anything to anybody. This guy, go be loud. Go tell everyone. I want you to spread this everywhere. How on earth does this happen? What's going on? Well, here's the interesting thing. Later on, Jesus comes back two more times in the Gospel of Mark to the Decapolis region. When he goes to the area, they recognize who he is. They recognize who he is because of this man and his testimony. When he goes into the region, this man runs out and starts spreading seed of the gospel. He starts telling everybody about Jesus. The description must be pretty good because they recognize who he is. And every time he shows up, they bring sick people. The last time he shows up, he not only heals people, but 4,000 of the local residents show up. He preaches to them, and that's the feeding of the 4,000. It's in the same region. Jesus is sowing seeds ahead of the disciples, ahead of himself. He knows he's there to bring the gospel to the Jews. He knows he's there to fulfill the law. He knows what he's supposed to do, but in the process, he's letting the Jews know this is bigger than just you. There's more going on than just your people. So he goes to the group that is the least lovely, the least accepted, the most hated. And he goes to one of the most despicable examples of what this group could be, this demon-possessed naked guy living in the tombs. And he becomes the evangelist to that area. This is so Jesus. So that when he comes back, they know that they're also welcome. Isn't that interesting? That Jesus would cross the lake, land someplace he's not supposed to be, talk to people he's not supposed to talk to, heal someone who most of his people would say doesn't deserve it, to plant the seeds of the gospel for the next time he's in the area. It makes me wonder the lesson we're supposed to learn here. Like I said, we can get caught up in Jesus calms the storm. That's wonderful. That's great. Jesus casts out demons. That's wonderful. That's great. There are so many examples of these things, it becomes less impressive. Step back and ask why. What's Jesus trying to teach his disciples? I think what he's trying to teach his disciples is that this is bigger than them. It is bigger than their ideology. It's bigger than their national identity. It's bigger than their own personal theologic views. And it's bigger than how they view the Gentile nation. This goes beyond them. I think what Jesus is trying to tell them is you need to be able to walk through danger. There's a storm. With no fear, because you're doing it for God, to the people you are least likely to want to evangelize. And then show the grace of God to those people. Because that's exactly what he did over these couple of days. I think the lesson that we learn here is that we have to move beyond our limited understanding of who deserves and who doesn't. Every church that I go to, every Christian that I talk to, at some point in time, there's a group of people that they're unwilling to go minister to. It can be all kinds of different people. It doesn't make any difference. You know, it'd be nice if the gospel would be in this area. Boy, there's a family in this area. Boy, do they need Jesus. Man, if anyone needs Jesus, it's the such and such family. Okay, if you're so aware of that, then go bring Jesus to them. Go talk to them about it. What? Not me. Someone needs to bring Jesus to them, not me. You know, God needs to get to the homosexual community. Yes, he does. You know what that means? Christians have to actually believe that they're valuable enough to go witness to them. We've got to get into the area that we're probably not supposed to be in and talk to the people we're probably not supposed to talk to and risk the religious among us seeing us as unclean so that we can bring the grace of God to the people that the rest of the church doesn't see as worthy. Do you see what Jesus is doing? The demoniac is, and that is so minor to this whole equation. We can get caught up in the miracle and the spiritual warfare, and that's really fantastic. Look at what he did. Where he did it, the people he touched. He was getting ready to launch the gospel. Now, shortly after this, he sends the disciples out. Guess where they went? Some of them went here. He's sending the gospel out ahead to reach the people that no one wants to reach, because those are the ones that God's after. Think of the people he brought with him. One of them was a tax collector. Nobody liked tax collectors. Well, no one still likes tax collectors. He brought the people the religious leaders thought were worthless to reach people the religious leaders think are worthless. The religious leaders thought it was all about them, all about their theology, all about the world needs us. No, it doesn't. World needs him. And that means we got to go to places we probably shouldn't be. We need to talk to people we probably shouldn't be talking to and risk the religious among us viewing us as dirty and unclean. A real Christian would never go there. Really? There's a ministry out in California. I haven't checked on them in a while, so I don't know if this is their full name, but you'll understand why it's not talked about a lot in the church. It's called XXXChurch.com. It's an online ministry. You know what XXX means, right? Their entire ministry is to the porn film community. That's their entire ministry, to reach out to those people. They are shunned by multiple churches. They are looked at as dirty because they go to these events and they try to witness to these people. They're looked at as lesser. They're looked at as compromisers because they're into an area that respectable Christians would never go in. Reaching people that respectable Christians would never. God needs to do something to bring those people out and then we'll deal with them. They've led hundreds of people out of that industry into the arms of Christ while the church is mocking them for doing it. Folks, we need to be willing to go through the storm, to be in an area where we're not supposed to be in, to talk to people we're not supposed to talk to, and risk the rest of the church thinking us as dirty for doing it, because that is what Jesus is modeling for us here. It's not about coming to the pretty church, listening to the nice music, having all the latest technology, having the right clothes, making sure I got my Sunday best on. My Sunday best is jeans that are not stained. And honestly, that's actually getting harder and harder to find. Okay? Or a polo shirt that doesn't have coffee on it somewhere. I think this one's clean. I'm pretty sure. This is the life that Jesus has asked us to live. This is the calling he's placed on his people. We're to bring the gospel, we're to bring the light of the world to the dark parts of the world. Can't do that while we're hiding in the church, waiting for God to do something supernatural in those people's lives so that they can finally get out of the darkness and come to the clean place where we are, because we're nice and safe. We got to go there. That's the mission. That's the job. Question is whether or not we're willing to do it. And that's something you have to answer individually. It's an act of missions. Missions is the taking of the gospel to where it is not. In every way. And what do we learn at the beginning of Acts? You should remember this, because we only spent a year and way too long in Acts. Right at the beginning, you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem. By the way, that's our immediate area, Judea, Samaria, to the other utter ends of the earth. We're to take the light where it is not. Not wait for them to come looking for the light. We take it to them. Jesus did it. His disciples did it. It's what he's asked us to do. We should be willing to do it. It's not going to be easy, and it will cost. But that's the job, to be his witnesses. And you got to decide if that's what you want to do. I'm going to leave it there because there's like 18 other things going on in my mind, and that's a bad thing, so it's time to get out. Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for the opportunity to look into your word, to not just see your power, but to see your will within that power. Lord, we know you are God of all. We know you can calm the storm. We know you can cast out the demons. But Father, help us not forget the purpose of why these things took place, to show us what it means to be where we probably shouldn't be, talking to people we might not have been talking to, risking the rest of the religious viewing us as unclean. Help us to willing to step into the darkness with your light and do so without reservation or worry of how we might be viewed. Help us to do it because it's what you've asked us to do. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Hey, thanks for joining us today. We're glad you could be here. If you'd like to see more or watch more, you can check out our service live on Facebook at Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock, also on YouTube. You can also visit us at our website at www.riveroflifechurch.org. We hope you have a fantastic week.